Welcome to everyone to our first half 2023 results call. I'm joined today by Václav Pereček, the Group CFO of IPIV, and also by Petr Hoďka, who will join us later as the Group Sustainability Manager. Today we'll effectively run two presentations for you. First will be the normal results announcement, and then we'll also wish to present to you our Green Finance Framework, which was very recently published, and then we'll open it up to questions at that stage. If we can move to the summary for the half year results on page five. Here, as many of you know who cover my calls every six months, I try and come up with a statement that summarizes the results for you. This time I think a quote that I remember from my school kind of sums it up, which is basically, "Stability is the cornerstone of progress." EP Infrastructure continues as always. It's a leading Central European group operating traditional energy infrastructure assets. We're core in transmission, distribution, and storage of gas, as well as distribution of electricity and the provision of district heating. Our assets remain in Slovakia, Czech Republic, and Germany, and our assets continue to have a commonality of generating high cash flow from a relatively low level of sustainable CapEx. In the last 12 months period ending 30th of June 2023, we're very pleased to give you the following numbers. Consolidated revenues rose to 4.6 billion euros from 4 billion euros in the financial year 2022. The adjusted EBITDA was 1.375 billion, which is a fall from 1.455 billion. The fall, I believe we flagged quite well in our last call. As the commodity markets have stabilized and prices have gone down, EPIV gradually returns to its core infra business. When there are periods of elevated commodity prices, clearly there is some upside to our results. Therefore, this covers through to the proportionate EBITDA for the last 12 months was 831 million euros, which is a fall from 875 million euros. Particularly pleased that the proportionate net leverage ratio as of 30th of June 2023 fell to 2.57 from a level of 2.9 in the financial year 2022. An excellent result, continues the group's commitment not to distribute dividends. Adjusted free cash flow rose very nicely from 736 million euros to 1.1 billion euros. An excellent result, but it effectively reflects the return of significant margining deposits that were in place during 2022, specifically in our district heating business, referring to electricity sales that were sold forward. The group conversion ratio therefore went back to historically what you would expect from the group, so it rose from 51% to 80%. Therefore, despite the ongoing geopolitical risk, EPIV again confirms its resilience, which stems from its diversification across four core segments. If we then move to page six, we again have the key company highlights. These haven't changed, so I'll leave those for you. If we then move to page eight, we again outline the group. EPIV continues to be a joint venture between the EPH Group, owning 69%, and Macquarie and other institutional co-investors owning 41%. The structure of the four divisions and the companies within those divisions have not changed since our previous presentation. Indeed, the markets we operate in remain the same. If we move then to the last point in the group overview, we're very pleased to say that in April 2023, Standard & Poor's issued a rating update, which revised our outlook to stable BBB negative. in the bottom right-hand corner, then it's a restatement of the numbers that I've given you. Adjusted EBITDA fell, proportionate EBITDA fell, adjusted free cash flow rose, group conversion ratio rose, the proportion of net debt clearly fell, and the net leverage ratio also fell. All in all, a stable, resilient set of results in a geopolitical situation and an energy situation which is gradually returning to some form of normality. On page 9, we outline in summary for you the performances of the business. Clearly, the number one division now of the group is gas and power distribution. And here, we had a strong and reliable and stable performance from our DSOs, but we also had a strong performance from our supply businesses, which are reflected in the increase of the results from 556 million euros to 612 million euros. Gas storage, these figures are for the last 12 months. Clearly, gas storages are now mandated by the European Union to be full. This is, if you like, a long-term positive to the gas storage business, and we're delighted to see that the results rose from 379 million to 415 million for the last 12 months ended 30th of June. The third division used to be the largest division, is clearly gas transmission. Here, I think we can confirm that commercially and operationally, the business performed more or less consistently with the last 12 months. The flows remain lower but consistent, and the payments remain constant. Clearly, the reduction of the result from 324 million to 161 million is due primarily to the financial costs incurred in risk management, where we effectively put in risk management costs to effectively protect the company from its long hedge book that it had in place in 2022, 23 and 24. But operationally, the flows remain constant compared to the previous presentation that we made. On page 10 and 11, we look at our ESG pillars and our strategy. I think this is probably repeated when we go through our green finance framework. So in the interest of giving you all long enough to ask your questions, then we'll defer this bit to the green finance framework presentation that comes later. That ends basically the summary of the results for the last 12 months. If we then move to page 14, I'll pass you over to Václav Palacek, the group CFO of EPIF. Václav.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gary. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome also on my behalf. It's my pleasure to be here with you today and walk you through our H1 results and update on our capital structure. Before I start, let me flag that the financial figures that we are presenting elsewhere in the presentation have been derived from H1 interim IFRS accounts that have been reviewed by independent auditor. The accounts are available on our website in the investor sections, where you can also find the presentation press release. Following to this call, we will make available also a recording of this call. So now, without further ado, let's start with our balance sheet presented on slide number 14. In the world of business, they say cash is king. Well, let's have a closer look at our cash position that stood at 1.6 billion as of June 2023, which is rather a stable figure compared to 1.5 billion balance as of December. And reason for that rather stability is our prudent financial management that led us to utilize cash flows from operation to reduce our external indebtedness. That you can see in our gross debt position, which declined from 4.6 billion to 4.15. So this is 451 million reduction, of which 400 million relates to repayment of RCFs at EPIF, which means that this 400 million facility is again available for a potential future drawing, and the maturity of that facility is January 2025. Getting back to the cash position, it's clear that both our shareholders are committed to strengthening our balance sheet. They have been patient and haven't declared any dividends since May 2021. Speaking of cash, let me also comment on one quasi-cash item, which is margining receivable of 115 million from the power exchange. That figure is presented under receivable and other assets. And those who listen us during full year 2022 results call, you might recall we had 311 million of receivable, and I expressed our belief that virtually all amounts should be returned to us by end of this year. So the reduction towards 115 is good progress on that commitment. Mentioning power exchange, let me continue with mark-to-market revaluation of our financial instruments. For risk management purposes, we have been using financial derivative instruments, namely to hedge our interest rate risk, foreign exchange risk, and commodity price risk. From mark-to-market revaluation perspective, the greatest portion of the value on balance sheet relates to commodity derivatives. And we have three types of hedging relationships. So firstly, it's power for our supply portfolio under the distribution segment. Then it's power that is being generated by heat infra segment. And thirdly, it's gas for our gas transit segment. If you look at the balance sheet, it's clear that mark-to-market revaluation balances decline to roughly half what we had as of December. And the reason for that is both its volume that declined and also its price of commodity, as we witnessed further decline in commodity prices during first half of this year. Last item I would like to comment on here is a revaluation of gas distribution network that we maintain at its fair value. According to IAS 16, which is IFRS standard focus on property, plant and equipment, a revaluation needs to be carried out at regular intervals and ideally by independent expert. And as a result of such revaluation, we increased our assets by 590 million and recorded respective accounting non-cash gain from the revaluation directly to the equity as required by the standard. With that, let's move further to have a look at our operational performance that we illustrate using EBITDA bridge on slide 15. So you can see bridge for H1 2023 performance against H1 2022. Our adjusted EBITDA dropped by 12% or 80 million. In simple terms, simple EBITDA declined 8% or 52 million. You can see that in prior period, we adjusted EBITDA for 28 million, which relates to network losses incurred by the power DSO last year. Clearly, this was one-off situation, and there is no need for a similar adjustment in 2023. So let's have a look how individual segments contributed to the overall result. Gas transmission experienced a significant decline in its performance. It recorded EBITDA of 43 million in 6 months 2023, and this is mainly result of declined gas flows through its network to roughly, which is roughly 54% decline, which in turn had a negative impact on volume of gas in kind and associated hedges. Further, I need to mention that EUStream this year recorded 29 million impairment to its inventories of gas. So this is accounting non-cash item recorded within its EBITDA. Gas and power distribution segment increased the results nicely, partly thanks to DSOs, partly thanks to supply business. In terms of DSO, they benefited from certain time shifts and optimization of their cost structure. And supply business, in general, they operate in a much better environment. And I need to remind you that in 2022, our supply business in Slovakia suffered certain financial loss related to a duty to act as a supplier of last resort. So again, this was one of item in 2022. Gas storage business significantly improved performance by 71 million. And this is thanks to the fact that approximately since last summer, we are seeing increased summer-winter spread as well as increased demand for gas storage services, as Gary already commented, both of which has positive impact on pricing for storage services. So here we are comparing H1 2023 with elevated prices for storage services, while in H1 2022 the prices were much lower. And last but not least, heat infra segment with, I would say, a rather expected decline of performance by 41 million. We flagged that 2022 performance was really exceptional, driven by high power spreads, while this year we are seeing increasing fuel cost, increasing cost of emission allowances, while the power prices declined significantly. So overall, adjusted EBITDA period and period, minus 12%. Now let's have a look at the other components of our operational performance, which is presented on slide number 16. So we discussed EBITDA, now depreciation, amortization, impairment, fairly stable figure, even though we performed that revaluation of the gas distribution network. Reason for the stability is that we revaluated pipeline that has accounting useful life in range 30 to 70 years, so the impact on the depreciation is rather minor from group perspective. Then the net finance result, we are moving from net gain plus 37 to net loss minus 19. Reason for that, that shift is primarily one of accounting non-cash revaluation of our interest rate swaps performed last year following to a significant increase in interest rates. With respect to a finance result, the major part is represented by obviously interest expense. We have 47 million expense in H1 2023, which is 4 million higher than in prior period. The driver is the fact that we drew 400 million RCF for certain period, and that instrument has a floating rate, while the majority of our indebtedness is fixed rate instruments. Tax expense well in line with prior period, in line with the EBITDA development, and I can confirm that as envisaged, we do not experience any significant impact of windfall taxes or price cap or any other measures introduced in the Czech Republic, Slovakia or Germany. Then moving to cash flow statement, we are presenting CapEx pretty much consistent period on period. We continue to invest majority of CapEx into both of our DSOs networks. However, speaking of consistency, I need to flag that our heat infra segment is committed to decarbonization, so in periods to come you shall see increased capex with respect to heat infra segment. And finally, adjusted free cash flow, we are reporting 607 million, which is even higher than EBITDA than we generated, and the reason for that is, as Gary already said, it's the return of margining 196 million return during first half 2023, while prior period free cash flow suffered from the fact that we had to deposit margining to the power exchange. Now, having explained the dynamics of balance sheet, P&L and cash flow, let's move on to calculation of our leverage that we calculate on a fully consolidated basis and also proportionately consolidated basis. Let me explain that the proportionate consolidation takes into account the actual ownership of EPIF if in individual subsidiaries. So for illustration, EPIF has effectively 69% in NAFTA. Therefore, we apply 69% to NAFTA's net debt and NAFTA's EBITDA. In the top left table, you can see the full figures derived from our consolidated balance sheet. Then further below, you can see the proportionate figures, namely proportionate net debt of 2.1 billion. Then we apply proportionate adjusted EBITDA for 12 months period ended June 2023, which is 831 million, and then we arrive at leverage 2.57. The figure is relatively low. It's certainly lower than levels that we maintain in the past, and the figure is even lower than our 3.5 target. The explanation for that is we are using LTM EBITDA, and therefore we are benefiting from strong performance of heat infra and storage business in second half of 2022. Now, what you can expect from end of 2023 in terms of leverage? While I would avoid any forward-looking statements, I can guide you to the past. In October 2022, we established a new leverage target of 3.5, and we said that we would like to be at or below 3.5 towards year end 2023. So this is what you can reasonably expect from us. In terms of dividends from EPIF, I could claim that in a hypothetical scenario where we would be outperforming, therefore leverage would be heading below 3.5, and at the same time, all the recently elevated business and market risks would be significantly mitigated, then I would expect our shareholders to prompt question whether it's time to initiate dividends. So it might happen that we might distribute dividends in 2023. However, it will be subject to 3.5-time cap and overall risk position of Eustream. Now let's have a look at our capital structure from a more strategic perspective. The capital structure is based on three underlying principles. Firstly, we do like bonds. Currently, 92% of our external indebtedness is represented by bonds, and I believe it would be healthy for us to remain that ratio in range 80 to 95%. Secondly, from pricing perspective, we believe that our optimum is in range 70 to 75% of our gross proportionate debt to sit at holding level, while the rest at operating entities. And third principle is the leverage target of 3.5 times that remains in place, and we already discussed that one. Further, let me shortly comment on a limitation for indebtedness that is at our subsidiaries. It's 2.5 time net debt to EBITDA, which is included in shareholder agreement at SSE and SPPI level. The limit has been there in place since our acquisition of each group. And actually on slide 19, you can see the performance against that limit. So to the left-hand side, you can see SSE Group, which is in fact in net cash position, meaning cash is higher than external debt. And frankly, we didn't have any major external debt at SSE Group, even though a majority of that group is represented by Power DSO, which is nice, stable, regulated business. Second group I mentioned is SPPI, where we are reporting leverage of 1.0 times as of June 2023. This is somewhat below what we maintained in past. We were rather around 1.5, And the reason for that is the declined performance of Eustream that we decided to address through reduction of upstreams from Eustream and also reduction from SPPD to parent company. And as a result, you can see decreased leverage and cash position consolidated for SPPI Group at level of 749 million as of June, while we had three Eurobonds in the group maturing 2025, 27 and 2031. With respect to the majority of the external debt, as I said, it's at Topco level, EP Infrastructure is issuer of four Eurobonds totaling 2.35 billion. Now let's conclude this section on slide number 20, which illustrates our liquidity. So as you remember, I said we have more than 1.6 billion of cash across the group, and on top of that we have 940 million of committed credit facilities across the group. Maybe more importantly, let's have a look at the, again, top holding level. If we look at EP Infrastructure and EP Energy as two holding standalone entities connected through cash pool, we had there 601 million of cash as of June, plus we had 480 million of available committed credit facilities. Then I said we have 115 million of margining deposits, and from post-balance sheet events, I would like to mention that as planned, EPIF received almost 82 million of dividend from its direct shareholding in NAFTA. So the liquidity position is fairly strong. Now, the elephant in the room is probably the 750 million EPIF bond maturity in April 2024 and potentially 500 million bond maturing February 2025, which is guaranteed by Eustream. However, as I said, thanks to strong liquidity and expected cash flows, I can claim that we are reasonably comfortable that we will manage to address both maturities. Thanks to the strong liquidity, we can make well-considered decisions without being rushed. Clearly, our next step needs to be to determine what volume of refinancing we need. It doesn't have to be full 750 million. And importantly, we have wide range of options how to refinance. Logically, the initial thought could be bond market, where we have strong record. We have implemented and published our green finance framework, so potentially we could issue a green bond. Though if we don't like bond market terms, we have other options, such as we could turn to our trusted banking relationships, or we could look at private placement, which is an avenue that we successfully explored in past. And last but not least, let me claim that with respect to bond buyback on secondary market, while we haven't executed any bond buybacks so far, we still consider the buyback as a valid tool in our financial toolkit, and we might utilize it when it aligns with our strategic objectives. So in summary, EPIF confirmed its strength and resilience. We delivered stable results, strengthened our balance sheet, and we are maintaining strong liquidity. I confirm that we feel that we are ready to address both upcoming maturities, and I outlined the ways how we might address their refinancing. And with that remark, I would hand over to Gary for his wrap-up.
Okay, thanks, Václav. We also leave on the presentation the core summaries of the four divisions. We've been through this many times, but clearly we're happy to take questions on any of the divisions that you have questions on. And therefore, I think we can move more straight away to page 29. And there we will wrap up the financial results for 30th of June 2023. And as I said, I think it's clear that stability is clearly the cornerstone of progress. The results are clearly very stable, but I think for those that have followed us through the last 2 years, it's a clear sign of distinct progress for the group, given the geopolitical and the energy market fluctuations we've seen over the last 18, 24 months. Strong financials, as Václav has just gone through. We remain committed fully to investment grade rating. Our asset base remains the same for diversified businesses. Our strategy, belief that gas storage will become more integral to the energy requirements of Europe, I think has proven correct. And the outlook, I think, remains roughly the same as for the full year 2022. EPIF underlying is a pure infrastructure business with the majority of its revenue from regulated or long-term contracted businesses. In circumstances of stress and elevated commodity prices, then clearly our results will move upwards. But in a situation of stable commodity prices and stable energy markets, you will see us reverting back to effectively the stable infrastructure business we were for many years before last. So that ends the financial presentation. We're really pleased to move on then to a presentation of our green finance framework. And this was released on our website last week. So if we can move to page 5 of that presentation. And here we're again delighted that we have created the Green Finance Framework for EPIF. It clearly was, is, and will continue to be a logical step for EPIF, which will link the future financing to the execution of our transition play. The decarbonisation strategy, EPIF aims to play a leading role in the transition to a zero carbon energy system. We have now developed robust decarbonisation strategy with clearly defined roles for each asset class in a net zero world. And this, I think, is an enormous step forward for us. EPIF believes fully in the role of gaseous fuels as paramount in the energy transition. Simply put, we don't believe that the transition to a net zero world can be achieved without gaseous fuels. Therefore, EPIF fully acknowledges the temporary role of natural gas as a transitional fuel and the need, therefore, to replace that with renewable gases. EPIF intends to aim its future CapEx predominantly towards adaptation of these assets to renewable gases such as hydrogen and biomethane, synthetic methane, etc., etc. We can confirm that a significant proportion of our future CapEx is planned to be aligned with the EU taxonomy criteria. And to give you, I think, clarity on that, we're talking about more than 60% of our CapEx will be aligned with EU taxonomy criteria. Our key decarbonisation pillars, clearly the phase-out of lignite in our district heating plants, and the adaption of our gas infrastructure in Slovakia for renewable gases, robust leak detection and repair programmes control methane leakage. In May 2023, we declared our medium-term and long-term decarbonisation commitments, and we confirm our commitment to achieving net zero in all of our operations by 2050. We also continue to be rated by third parties. We have an ESG risk rating of 17.8, low risk from Morningstar Sustainalytics, which places us in the fourth position over 94 companies from the multi-utility sector. And we have an ESG score of 63 from S&P Global Ratings. The Green Finance Framework. This has been established, this has been published. It reinforces our decarbonisation strategy and links the proceeds from future financing to the execution of our transition plan. Key building blocks, close alignment to the EU taxonomy, alignment fully with the ICMA green bond principles, and we have external assurance will be in place on the allocation and impact reporting. Key assets have already been identified, represented by the gas and power distribution grids and by the district heating systems, where cogeneration plants, including adjacent heating networks. EPIF is very pleased to have solicited second-party opinions on this green finance framework from Shades of Green, which is now part of S&P Global, where we've been awarded a light green, which we believe is an excellent result, and we've also received a good rating from Sustainable Fitch. I think now the man that's actually done the majority of the work, so we'll pass over now, delighted to introduce you to Petr Hoepka. Petr is the Group Sustainability Manager of EPIF, and he will take you through page 6. Petr.
Thank you very much, Gary. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So it will be my pleasure today to walk you through the components of the Green Finance Framework. So the slide number 6 is broken down into actual components as defined by the ICMA Green Bond Principles. Let me start with the use of proceeds, which is obviously the key building block of the framework, as the investors will be definitely interested how the proceeds will be allocated. So the proceeds will be allocated to a combination of existing assets, so this is what we call refinancing, as well as additional capex. Please note that for the existing assets, that doesn't mean that the proceeds will be allocated just virtually, but there will be a lot of substantial capex to be spent on those assets as well going forward. And majority of this capex is expected to be taxonomy aligned, as mentioned already by Gary. The key project categories should belong to the categories of renewable energy and energy efficiency, and the specific assets will be introduced on the following slide by Václav, actually. So he will walk you through the specific assets so that we talk in specific terms. So now let's move on to the second component, which is the evaluation and the selection process. This will be ultimately done by the Green Finance Committee, which will oversee if the eligibility criteria are still complied with. And just a technical point for you to understand that the green assets will be held on the so-called green balance sheet at the latest IFRS balance sheet value. I think we can move now to the third subsection on the slide, which is the management of proceeds. So the proceeds will be managed in a so-called portfolio approach. What this actually means is that in case of multiple issuances, the proceeds will be managed on an aggregated basis, as opposed to a bond-by-bond approach. You can imagine the allocation as a so-called green balance sheet, where on the left-hand side, we will have the so-called green asset or capex, and on the right-hand side the proceeds from the actual bonds once these are issued. And EPIF will need to ensure that the value of the green asset always exceeds the proceeds. If not, then the unallocated amount will need to be held on a dedicated account in cash. So if we turn to the fourth subsection on this slide, which is the reporting, that's obviously the phase which comes only after the bond is actually issued. Then EPIF is committed to issuing two kinds of reports, the so-called allocation report, where you will see the so-called green balance sheet and how the proceeds are actually allocated, and the so-called impact report, which is something to demonstrate that the investments which we are making have an actual impact. You know, that not just the proceeds are formally allocated, but that there is an actual impact as measured by the metrics which we monitor. So if we move to the fifth subsection on this web page, which is the external review, as already mentioned by Gary, we received 2 second party opinions from the Shade of Green, which is now part of S&P Global, and also Sustainable Fitch. Both second party opinions are available or accessible through our website. And once we issue the allocation and impact report, those will be also externally assured on a regular basis. And this brings us to the last point, which is the alignment, which is probably the key point on this slide, which is the alignment with the best market standards, and which was also confirmed by both SPO providers. So basically our framework was built on the green bond principles, and green loan principles, which are very similar, because our framework might be used for issuance of not only bonds, but also potential loans. And for the actual eligibility criteria, because when defining those, you have a certain degree of freedom, we very closely followed the EU taxonomy regulation. And this is something you will see when you go through the actual framework. There is a further detail on the framework in the annex to the presentation. We find that the annex is too detailed to be presented on this call. So please, once you have take your time, please to study if you are interested in the annex, and don't hesitate to contact us if you have any questions. Okay, so that's it from my side. It was a pleasure, and now I would like to pass my word to Václav, who will introduce the specific assets within our group that shall be eligible for green financing.
Thank you, Petře, for introduction of individual elements of our green finance framework, and I'll focus on assets that we envisaged for the framework. As you know, EPIF operates energy infrastructure across 4 independent segments, and from our balance sheet we have identified 3.5 billion of assets that are envisaged for the framework. In particular, it's gas distribution network, which represents 61% from that 3.5 billion. Then it's power distribution network, representing roughly 22%, and the balance is represented by assets and activities under heat infra segment. So let me start with the largest one, gas distribution network. That is owned and operated by SPP Distribucia, which is nature monopoly gas distributor in Slovakia. From the existing network, we have identified 2.5 billion value of existing network that is already hydrogen ready. It's made of polyethylene, which is hydrogen aligned material. And for the rest of the network, which is roughly 40% of the network, we need to make further replacements or refurbishments. In particular, in terms of low and medium pressure pipelines, we need to replace steel piping for polyethylene. In terms of high pressure pipelines, we cannot use plastic, so we need to use higher grade steel, which is quite expensive, and also there are other elements that needs to be replaced or refurbished, such as gas pressure reduction stations. The ultimate aim is to allow the network to transition away from natural gas. Beside that, we are also investing into methane leak detection and repair program that should help us to significantly reduce our methane emissions for gas distribution. The second asset, as I said, is power distribution network owned by FSD, which is one of 3 nature monopolies in Slovakia. It's part of interconnected European power grid. Specifically, Slovak grid has certain elements. In terms of power generation in Slovakia, the majority of output is generated from nuclear and hydropower. And in terms of our grid specifically, over past 5 years, approximately 88% of new connections related to renewables, mostly solar. So through our investments, we would like to further strengthen our network to allow for even a more rapid deployment of renewables and decentralized sources of energy. Third asset is under heat infra segment, where we identified roughly 0.6 billion of assets and activities. In particular, it's net future capex and existing heat distribution network and biomass units. In the Czech Republic, we operate 3 lignite cogeneration plants that we would like to transition away from coal into a modern mix of CCGTs, biomass, and waste to energy technology. And we are not aiming only to transition to natural gas, but we would like to make sure that the technology, namely the gas turbines, allow for combustion of hydrogen and renewable gases in order really to ultimately to transition away from fossil fuels. So all in all, we have identified and committed 3.5 billion of green assets for our framework, and we expect the portfolio to further expand as there is increased visibility on adoption of renewable gases in the region. Now back to Gary, if you could update us or remind us what are EPIF decarbonization commitments, please.
Thanks, Václav. So page 8 will effectively show the clear roadmap on the tons of CO2 equivalent and the reductions, and we're particularly pleased with the reductions from 2022 to 2030. But it's a clear roadmap now across all 4 divisions. The commitments, just to re-emphasize, reduce scope 1 and 2 CO2 emissions by 60% by 2030 compared to 2022 level. We reduce the methane emissions fully in line with the global methane pledge. Phase out coal by 2030. I believe we probably managed to achieve that earlier. Achieve carbon neutrality in respect to scope 1 and 2 emissions by 2040. Achieve net zero in respect to 1 and 2 emissions by 2050. And we will indeed start the collection of scope 3 emissions for 2024, which will be disclosed in the first half of 2025. On page 9, the key highlights of the decarbonisation strategy, I'll leave that for you. Point 10, I think, is quite relevant. The primary objective when developing the group's decarbonisation goals and emission reduction pathways was to ensure alignment with scientific principles and the Paris Agreement's aim to limit global warming to no more than 1.5%. On page 10, again, we highlight the key hydrogen initiatives in our distributions, transit and storage divisions. Won't go through that, I'll leave that with you. And then to summarize, that we are now fully committed with a green finance framework. We're committed to a CapEx program that predominantly will be EU taxonomy aligned, and we believe we can play an active role in the transition to a net zero world. And to confirm for us, that does involve, if you wish to transit from coal and nuclear, in the case of Germany, to gas, gas still plays a role. And gas plays a role because that is the transition to green gases. So on that, we finished the 2 presentations.